This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
FUBAR Radio and UN Women UK present a live 24-hour radio show.
24 hours.
Absolutely love Blink 182. Took me back. Took me right back. On the phone lines, though, right now, we have Spanish-American comedian, actress and writer Carmen Lynch. Carmen, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Very Yay. Good. How are you today?
Pretty good. I'm losing my voice, but it sounds a little sexy, I think, so I'll be okay.
It sounds mighty sexy.
That's what I tell myself and my, yeah. I don't know how many hours again I'm in this, but my voice is going. Carmen, you are a Spanish-American comedian, actress and writer based in New York. First of all, being a Spanish-American actress, what is that like when it comes to casting for roles? Do you find your roles are lesser because you're a Spanish-American, or do you have more roles that you can go for?
I mean, first of all, thanks for calling me an actress. I mostly do stand-up comedy, but when I do acting, it doesn't seem to be a huge thing. I think my height is probably the biggest issue, because my Spanish family is very petite. And I'm 6 feet tall, so I don't even look Spanish. It's not usually
it's
even
lie.
Get a Spanish role.
So,
but I do a lot of Spanish stand-up, which is fun. I do tour around the world and do stand-up in Spanish, so that's really fun.
Oh, wow.
Mm. And so when you say Spanish, you're differentiating from Latino?
Yeah, it's like Castilian stand-up, yeah.
But I mean, when you're saying Spanish, you mean Spanish as in from Spain, as opposed from Latin
America.
From Spain,
yeah. From Spain, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you've got an album, Dance Like You Don't Need the Money. Tell us about your album, and tell us about your musical influences.
Oh, wow. Musical influences?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean because it has dance in the title? I mean, I kind of dance on my own. I don't really play music with my dancing. But it's an album that I decided to put together because I've been doing stand-up for like 15 years. So I just put all of my favorite jokes together in an album. And actually, it just got Sirius XM's Best Album of the Year for 2017. So that was exciting.
Wow.
That is amazing. So,
thank you. And so now I'm, you know, starting just to put together my next one because, you know, when you wait that long to put an album together, you have a lot of material that didn't make the album.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So. What do you prefer, like, when it comes to the comedy, the writing? What do you prefer doing? What do you get the bigger buzz out of? I suppose it's the performing side.
The performing is so much fun because, you know, every time you perform, it just comes out differently. But for me, it's really just creating that new joke and, you know, figuring out if it's going to work. Like the first time you do a joke that you're excited about, whether or not it works. I mean, if it works, it's great. But if it doesn't work, it just means, you know, you just have to tweak it until it works. But that coming up with that new baby, that new joke is just so fun.
Yeah, yeah, it must be.
Yeah, I've always just thought about how daunting it would be to do stand-up. The other day I saw, actually yesterday, I just saw a clip of Richard Pryor's son. Wow. He's doing stand-up now, but he got booed off the stage.
See, I would hate that. That to me is the idea, two things scare me the most, singing in public and having to do stand-up. Do you not feel very vulnerable, Carmen, when, I suppose, of course you don't because it's what you do, but comedy's quite vulnerable because you get that instant either rejection or exception, don't you?
Yeah, I think at the beginning especially because when I see people who say stuff like, oh, I've always wanted to try stand-up, but I'm just too scared, I usually tell them, like, well, it's not that I wasn't scared. I mean, I was very scared, but I still wanted to try it. But I think, you know, after a while, you just build that confidence and then eventually, you know, you just don't care. I mean, of course, sometimes you care if it's like an important show and someone's there to see you. But a lot of times if the audience feels uncomfortable, like, because I can get pretty dark. If they feel uncomfortable, I just like to go darker. It's kind of a, well, you know, you can't handle that. Well, let me give you a little more. You know, so that can be kind of fun too.
Well, this is obviously the show for the He for She campaign, and we've been talking a lot about sexism in the industry. What sexism have you come across in the industry?
In the business? I mean, I think a lot of it is just, you know, the fact that they'll just put one woman on the show, or they'll call you, like, you know, then this next performer is a lady, you know, or she's not only funny, she's pretty, and, you know, stuff like that. Like, they just treat you like you're just not a regular comedian. You know, there were moments of maybe, you know, I think every woman has felt uncomfortable in a certain point when they're treated like a piece of meat. But, you know, you just kind of have to show them that you won't tolerate that and just keep going. Like, don't let that affect you. And eventually, I mean, I don't really notice now how many women are on the show. I try to just focus on the show itself. But you do see that it's changing. There are a lot more women on shows now, and it's really great to see that, you know.
Yeah, cool. It really is. Well, look, Carmen Lynch, I'm going to have to say our farewells. But thank you so, so much for talking to us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. And I'm very excited to come to London in a couple weeks. I'll be there for 3 weeks doing shows. So
amazing.
Thanks. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Hope to catch you then. Yeah. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Carmen.
Thank you.
Bye. From a minute then, I thought she was going to say, we need to meet up, Rach. Go for lunch. I'll be in London soon. We'll go for lunch. We'll do what we do. We'll do lunch in the theatre. Yeah. It's what we do. We meet up like that. Thank you, Carmen. Thank you very, very much. Now, if you have just joined us and you are thinking, what's going on? I tell you, I've had many moments in the last, I don't know. My maths is really bad, but How many hours have I got left? Three hours. Just under 3 hours.
Yeah.
That's madness. This is a live 24-hour radio show, all for the He For She campaign with UN Women UK for Arts Week. We would love you to donate. All you need to do, and it is to support the He For She campaign, is to text UNWN15 followed by the amount you want to donate to 770. All money donated is going towards changing the reality for women and girls globally. And I have gone on about the text number. If you're slightly confused, and I don't blame you, just go to londonartsweek.org. Also, UN events going on. 10th of March, which is today. Small Things Theatre presents a very special night of small things in aid of UN Women's He For She campaign, full of fun, frivolity and fearless talent, showcasing some of the best poets, playwrights, performers, musicians and comedians. A night of small things is London's finest variety night. There's so many things going on in Arts Week. It's amazing. How have you found it so far?
The show. Well, no. Before we go any further, we have to say, Rachel.
I'm going with that.
You have been killing it, Rachel. What an amazing job you have done.
Thank
Not only
you.
Is it such a big task just to host the show, full stop, but do a marathon like this. I mean, how many guests have you spoken to so far?
Do you know what?
It's all the
blur. We were trying to work that out. I just don't know. So many.
It's been thick and fast,
and it seems to be somehow picking up even more speed and pace. I don't understand. Like, even the hours of like 3, 4, 5am, we were really busy.
Yeah.
It was madness. It's been amazing. I think that's why I don't feel... I feel a bit like I've been active for hours, but I don't feel tired.
Yeah.
It's weird because that's, you know, it's just been fantastic. And it's very lovely, people supporting the cause for the same reasons why I approached the UN originally, and the same reasons why I wanted to do this. It's very, again, another reason why it's great to be talking so openly about all of this. We all want the same things, don't we? We all want here the gender equality. We want our voices to be heard.
Yes. Well, this is what I hope, is that we're all on that same
everyone
page.
Everyone's come in is like literally being very excited, and we've shared stories over the hours, and we're all, you know, everyone's got a story to tell.
It's been wonderful. And that's what I think is such a special thing that you've done, like by doing this show, to just get all of these opinions and voices from all over the world. Because, you know, I heard you speaking to people in Australia, some wonderful women there. We were just talking to some wonderful ladies in Europe, in America, like just to unite all these voices and show that there is this unity and we're all on this same page mission. That's all thanks to your amazing work that you've done to put this all together.
Thank you.
And all of the Foodbar angels.
They've been incredible.
Joe doing a great job with the tea. And
everyone's
Nat
been
just
amazing.
Keeping
Natalie
everything
been
running.
So
as usual.
I tell you, I don't know what I would have done without Nat. When you're in certain hours, you're just like, and then you get a message saying, you know, keep up the great work. You're like,
Yes.
I will, because you're listening and I love that. And it is lovely, and it's definitely been a fantastic experience. So far, I mean, who knows what's going to happen in the next few hours.
Still time.
I could literally peak like you've never seen anyone peak before. But
we've
are
got
here.
Your back.
Thanks. But that's the thing. My attitude now is, what could go wrong?
I'm still awake. Yeah.
I'm still here. I don't think anything could go wrong.
Yes.
Kind of. We'll see what happens.
Delirium.
Delirium, literally. I think we need a bit of a musical interlude. I am going to put on my hood. We'll be back in just a few minutes' time. Don't go anywhere.
Socks and sliders everywhere and every day. Full English breakfast at a cafe, not a cafe. No, no, baby, we don't let strangers come our way. But you should come to my hood, my hood, my hood. Mimi and Molly's best fried chicken is in South. I'll show you gangsters, don't you go running your racing 2 a.m. outside my house. Oh yeah, it's loud, but come to my hood, my hood, my hood. my head, my head, my head, my head. You should come to my head, my head, my head. Yeah, you should come to my head, my head, my head, my head. You should come to my head, my head, my head. Barely anyone in school after 15. We're chasing paper, think blueberries should be green. I want life, finding a way out is our dream. But you should come to my head, my head, my head.
From a hood where niggas make their money, then they move. The woman in the Caribbean shop is always rude, trying to get a patty just to compliment my food. So why you gotta tell my friends to move? No, we gotta booze the food when we see the Fed spin it. Bear wagwans, I ain't seen you for a minute. Coming from the land of wings and chicken fillets, where your friend might not be able to read, but he can bill it. You can see why that's a problem, any given problem. Staring in my face, I'ma ask you what's the problem. You can be Bane or you can be Robin, but we've had a lot of dark nights living up in Coffin. Man, there's babies having babies, man, it's crazy up in my hood. Shit's got me praying that I die good. Where we rather buy guns before we buy books. Where they left us in the dark, so we like kush.
There's no place like home. No place like home. Buy me any ticket, I don't wanna go to a town where there's no one like me round. Don't take me there or anywhere. Hey. Come to my hood, my hood, my hood.
My hood. I like how it stops all of a sudden. It's like, what? We have a guest in the studio, Luke Cutforth.
Hello.
Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did, yeah. Well done. Some people call me Cutfud and it doesn't really work.
Cutfud?
But that's
Cutfud.
Not even your name.
I know. Or Cutforth.
Cutforth, yes.
Cutforth. That's yeah. There. That exists.
That exists. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's lovely to have you. It's lovely just to have someone new on the show for a second. Filmmaker, YouTuber, over 500,000 subscribers.
And shrinking, yeah.
Yeah. Where do they go?
That's YouTube these days.
Where do they go? Director of The Drowning of Arthur Braxton. You are starting a podcast, we're going to go straight into this, called Educating Josh.
I am, yeah.
Tell me about it.
So I've been doing YouTube forever, and I've always wanted to try and use YouTube to kind of educate people. But one of my friends, Josh, who produced The Drowning of Arthur Braxton, my film, he has some funny views. Generally, he's a liberal, intelligent man. Okay. But sometimes he has views which even he goes, oh, I don't know why I think that, but I do. And so he came up with this idea, this sort of format called Educating Josh, which is where we bring three stories from the week and we go, Josh, what do you think of these stories? And they're sort of general questions like, having representation for all sexualities in film, for example. And his gut instinct sometimes is a little bit like, why do you think that? Don't do that, Josh. And we then spend the next 15 minutes educating Josh. And I think that's a lot of fun. And so far, we did two pilots.
Brilliant.
And we did educate him on a few things.
It's working.
It was really good, yeah. So we have a lot of fun with that. And I think it's going to be really, really exciting. We've done two pilots and we start hopefully in 2 weeks if it's not horrific.
If it's not we'll horrific. I think that's a genius idea.
Thank you.
I could do the show like that, educating me.
I think you should educate me on something by the end of the show. Teach me something.
Hey. We've got lots.
Yeah.
It's a lot of pressure for you.
It is.
But.
It is.
Educating Luke.
That's educating Luke. You've also shot a feature film, which is in final editing for.
Yeah. So that's The Drowning of Arthur Braxton, which you mentioned in the intro. We've been doing that for like... 3 years? I don't know. It's an indie film. Indie films take forever.
It takes 3 years. Yeah.
HMRC, if you're listening, please hurry up because they have some of our money and
aren't
we need
they,
that money.
They a treat.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. HMRC are not listening, but if you are, shout out not to you for being slow. So that was something where it's a feature film. It's about a young boy who runs away from school where he's being bullied and falls in love with a half mermaid, half girl in an abandoned bathhouse, and through his sort of relationship with her gains the strength to fix the other issues in his life, like his alcoholic father played by Johnny Vegas and bullies played by Keith Rice, and so it's a lovely film. It's a really heartfelt kind of heartwarming film. And it's my first feature I've ever done, and it's a lot of pressure, and I can't believe that 4,500 people on Kickstarter managed to back it and make it a thing. And we had a really good budget considering I've never done anything before and probably don't deserve it. But
were you a little bit panicked with the pressure, like when you saw how well it was being received, therefore?
Honestly, yeah. I mean, I was panicked and also relieved because I'd done a year of meetings with these big film people going, please let me make a film. And they were all like, no. And so we then went, all right, we'll do Kickstarter because I have a certain amount of people on the internet who care about my existence, I guess. And so yeah, it's a lot of pressure, but I think it's the nicest way to do it because I don't owe anyone anything. Like, I just, there's just people here who are just, they trust in me and they believe I can do it. And we do then actually owe some money because we had some extra money from some very wonderful people who decided to take that extra risk with us. But in general, yeah, it's nice that there's at least 4,000 people out there who believe in me, which is kind of terrifying.
They've got that belief in you.
But at least I can, I have then therefore have a reason why I'm directing it, because obviously I go on set and I'm like, I have to justify my place there because I haven't directed 10 films and won a BAFTA or an Oscar or whatever. Mm. I'm just this guy who, until now, has just done YouTube rubbish. And so I do, to a certain extent, have to have like, well, why are you? Why are you directing this? And I can go, well, because some people want me to.
Yeah.
And people don't want you to, so go away.
Yeah, off you trot. Yeah. A little question on the side. Since you were born in Hertfordshire.
How do you know that?
Well, I've been following you for many a year.
Have you?
Where in Hertfordshire were you born?
I was born in a little town called Hitchin.
Oh, my God. Hitchin? I come from a village outside of Hitchin called Shillington.
Shillington. Yes! Oh, lovely. That's so good.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Hitchin boy.
I'm a Hitchin boy. Went to Hitchin boys school.
I went to the girls' school for about a year.
For Hitchin girls?
Yeah, then I went off to Sage school.
Wow. Maybe we saw each other crossing down Hermitage Road. Who knows?
Hermitage Road. Herm's on there now. Blockbuster used to be there.
I used to go to Blockbuster. Like, I'm so excited about finding a fellow Hitchinite that I'm just spewing all over my words. I used to go to Blockbuster every week, and it's so sad that it's gone. Thanks, Netflix. God.
Yeah, I know. Ruining it. It's better choosing your film, getting some popcorn and some Haagen-Dazs and going to watch it.
Getting some popcorn and some Haagen-Dazs.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's so cool. Sorry. Having a very squealy moment.
You from anywhere near Hitchin? Anything interesting?
Well, not too far, but I'm from North London. So it's a drive away to get to Hitchin.
Still a southerner.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, still a southerner. Since then, you're evolving a new era in your YouTube world where you're trying to use your platform for good rather than just cheap entertainment.
Yeah.
Tell us more.
I don't know whether this is the middle of some kind of midlife crisis or if I genuinely believe in these things, but I've been doing YouTube since I was 15, and I haven't told anyone this yet, but I'll tell you on here because I don't think anyone from my audience is necessarily listening yet. If they are, then I'll be regretful and anyway, we'll see. I don't know. I haven't tweeted out yet. I should probably do that, shouldn't I? I'm not very good at this promotional thing. So I started when I was 15. I started with a YouTube username called Luke Is Not Sexy. And that's not a great username. Now that I'm going into all these meetings with these big, like, movie people...
Can't really get taken seriously.
It's kind of like, well... It's awkward and I don't like it. And also, the weird thing is YouTube's changed a lot and it sort of started demonetizing stuff and taking away promotion from stuff it deems inappropriate. And my username's got the word sexy in it. And that's the computer sort of goes, not that then. Let's put on something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm on my way to sort of moving away from that eventually. Dun, dun, dun. Very dramatic and scary. But in general, I'm just trying to. I did a video last week called How I Changed My Life in a Week. And I just tried to find. I sat down for a week, and I'm somebody who gets quite down and quite stressed and quite overwhelmed by things. Yeah. And so I sat down and tried to go, like, how can I work out how to fix my brain and find out little hacks and ways to make myself more productive? And I, over the course of a week, found things that improved my life. And so I then went, I want to share these with the internet. And so I made this video. It took me friggin' forever because I'm not very productive. Ironically, I was making a video about how I became more productive and put it off. But put it off. In general, I just want to use that platform to like spread positivity rather than just this is the cinnamon challenge, which it has its place and people sometimes need to...
Challenge.
Have you seen the cinnamon challenge? Utter rubbish.
That's amazing.
But people need light entertainment, obviously, sometimes. But until, like, I don't necessarily feel like I'm the one to do that anymore. I was when I was younger, and now I want to do something good. I build up this audience, and now I want to go, you, I want to help you and do the thing. Come on, let's go.
Let's do this.
More of that.
How did you build up your following? What is the key to... I'm not like, could you give me some? But how do you do it?
Honestly,
you
know? I have no idea. Like,
why do people say that? We had another... I forgot her name, Amber. She came in and huge following, young girl as well, and I asked her and she was like, I just don't know. It's like, how do you not know?
Honestly, I think there probably is some things that I've done, but I also just am a massive believer of I was the right place, right time.
Timing.
I started YouTube before it was a thing. Like, I got bullied at school for being a YouTuber. Now if you're a YouTuber, like, that's like the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, that's true.
And so that, but also I think it's just about trying to be yourself, trying to live positively and trying to like people care. You got to remember, this is not like a massive amount of people or as a big group. This is lots of individual people, and individual people are drawn to people who are genuine and people who care about something, and they can tell whether you care about something. So I've always tried to just make stuff I care about. And actually, the times when I've done something where I'm like, this will get the views, but I don't really care about it, it has in the short term, but in the long term, those people leave. The people who stay are the people who went, oh, this is something you really give a shit about, and I like that.
And on the flip side of that, then you've got people like, say, what's his name, PewDiePie or
PewDiePie,
something?
PewDiePie, yeah, Felix.
Because I don't think it's that deep or that caring. There's not, like, empathy or things behind that, is it? But is he not, like, the largest, biggest following on YouTube?
He is the biggest YouTuber in the world.
Okay. How much is, like, what is the following for the largest YouTuber?
I think he's, like, 60 million subscribers. I mean, yeah. I mean, I know Felix.
No depth to it.
Yeah, I mean, no, maybe not. Yeah. I mean, I do know Felix, and he is lovely. He's a really lovely, wonderful person.
When he's not getting
when he's
trouble.
Not being, you know, racist or anti-Semitic.
Also, lovely when he's not being anti-Semitic.
When he's not doing those.
Racist,
yes,
he's a great guy.
He's a great guy. But YouTube has created a culture where
I literally don't understand.
I know, isn't it amazing? This is what happens when you suddenly hear about this person who's one of the most famous people on the internet, and you have no idea that they exist. This is what 2018 is, Rachel.
Yeah, I mean, what Felix has done, he has basically chased sort of... YouTube's created a culture of drama and created a culture. And they don't like this. They're not trying to do it, I don't think.
Who doesn't
YouTube.
Like it? Oh, okay.
They don't like it, but they've created a culture where being the more dramatic gets more views because newspapers report on it and they reward press coverage with more views and more promotion. And so that's why you've got things like Logan Paul and PewDiePie doing this outrageous stuff.
Don't
and
like
so
Logan
while
Paul.
You can... to a certain extent, blame the person. And obviously, yes, blame the person. They're an idiot if they do something like that. Mm. Equally, you also want to create a platform that de-incentivizes horrible things. Like, I don't think at FUBAR Radio, they're going like, oh, who can be... Although, I was just about to say, Keir did say to me, Keir's filming me right now, he did say to me before we came on air, you don't have to talk about anal douching if you don't want to, because that was apparently a topic earlier.
I think I heard that going on. I just carried on walking. Keep on going, Rachel.
But FUBAR's not... You're not about like promoting be the most anti-Semitic or be the most shocking. You're just about be the best stuff, right?
I'm glad they don't, as a Jewish girl.
No, but that's what I'm just wondering, because you're saying that it's that what attracts your followers is the kindness and that people care and invest in your your message, like on a personal level kind of thing. So I'm just trying to understand, on, in contrast to the largest YouTuber in the world, what is it that draws those followers?
There are different ways of doing it, I suppose, aren't there? And people are always going to be, to a certain extent, drawn to dramatic, who can be the loudest, who can shout.
As has been since the beginning of time.
Yeah, it's the same with TV, it's the same in lots of different places.
And then is that something where you, did you start off as like, you were just tinkering with YouTube and it was like, oh, let me just put this up, or you had an agenda where you're like, right, I want to build up.
How did that happen?
So I used to do little short films on YouTube when I was really like 15, 14.
What kind of short films?
Like dramatic horror films.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah.
Like an actual, with a cast?
No, with my sister in a forest.
It's a film.
Yeah, there was one where she got hit by a meteor that flew down from the sky. I was basically learning all this different software and how to, and just having fun with it, basically.
Yeah.
And I put it on YouTube and I got like 100 views maybe, which is cool when you're 14.
Very cool.
And I just sort of spiraled out. I just really loved doing stuff and I loved getting that feedback from people. And then a girl I fancied was like, I like YouTubers who vlog. And I was like, I could vlog, couldn't I?
I could do that.
Yeah, and so I did. And she never loved me, but, you know.
Oh, she never.
Nothing motivates a man like a woman's pleasures.
Unless they're gay.
Yeah. It's true. Well, I think that might be all we've got time for.
Whoa.
With you.
Aw. Rest in peace, my existence.
Oh. Although, again, you've got a lot of followers. I'm very jealous.
I thought we were going to go live on the internet, but we didn't do that in the end, did we?
That's what I was going to say. That I know you say you're very jealous, but then I think that's what fascinates me with like Kickstarter, because it's quite daunting, because that's purely just something done on trust, where random people are just trusting
you with
all of this. And you could easily just like bounce.
I could just run away.
Actually, part of making the film was sitting on a beach in the Dominican Republic for 8 months. Sorry, guys. And now this video is just a this film is a selfie of me.
I think luckily my audience trusts me a bit more than that. But yeah, there is no, legally, I don't have to provide the film. Like,
crazy.
Kickstarter make no promises. So it's kind of terrifying as well. There's a lot of pressure on me to make sure it actually happens.
Mm.
And do you find, though, that there is this fear when you've got a lot of followers that it all becomes about the followers? That this, it's. I mean, I don't know. I find it a very weird world when there is that many followers, or I don't know.
But in terms of maintain, like, it's about, the content's no longer about me, it's about them.
That's, yes, I guess I do mean that, yeah.
I suppose I do, but I think I also have I'm very lucky in that I have a very caring audience. And my manager once put it to me, which he said, he was like summing up different people's audiences, and they were like, this audience likes this, this audience is happy when this happens, and then he went, Luke's audience is happy when Luke's happy. And I like that. That's nice. And
that's so lovely.
That is nice, isn't it? And I don't generally get a lot of like negativity, which is interesting, because most of my friends on YouTube do. And like for me, I had a video I put up a few weeks ago, and the YouTube automatic comment blocker blocked one comment, and I went, oh no, what have they done? And I went on the comment blocker and it said, I love you and this video. That was, that's the most hateful comment I get. That's all right. Yeah.
That's incredible.
I want to be in your world. I do. We could go back to Hitchin. We'll talk about it.
Perfect. We'll vlog together in Hitchin.
Yes.
This is Wilco's.
Yeah. Oh.
Woolworths. Woolworths was good as well.
Woolworths was very, very good. And Threshers. You remember Threshers?
Threshers.
What's Threshers?
That was like Wine Rack. I'm going way back.
Yeah. I mean, I left when I was 14, so I didn't.
I'm very old. I'm very old.
I didn't go to Threshers.
Well, look, Luke, thank you so much.
Thank you
for joining us here. We are going to take a little musical interlude. We're going to listen to Wake Up. Arcade, I can't speak. Fire, enjoy.
Radio presents
Harriet Rose.
Reggie Snow joins me again on Fubar Radio. I'm very impressed with your French on Mon Amour.
Yeah.
And I really like the juxtaposition of it being about love, but being the real side of love.
Yeah, a lot of hatred, a lot of like weirdness and confusion. It's just like build up of like the last couple of years and all these different moments and emotions I felt. So no, it's like crazy because that's like my experience, and then you know someone else feels it. It's like sick.
Do you get people feeding back to you being like, oh, this is how I felt when I listened to this? This is.
Yeah, they take it too deep. I'm just like, wow, cool. Wish I could help a bit more, but like, fuck, like, it's trippy, you know what I mean? But it's sick.
Every Thursday, Harriet Rose from 4 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Yeah, this is FUBAR Radio. This is our 24-hour live marathon for the He For She campaign with UK UN Women UK. I have been up since 5 p.m. yesterday.
Oh, my God.
2 more hours to go.
Insanity.
2 more hours
oh
to go.
Goodness. Congratulations.
It's odd. It's very, very surreal. Yeah. And I don't know if it's gone quickly or slow. I think it's gone quickly. I don't know. But we've got another guest in the studio, Faye Milton.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi.
It's lovely to have you here.
Lovely really to be is. Here.
Thank you for joining us. Drummer of Savages since yes. 2011. Mm-hmm. Also the drummer of, is it Otomo?
Otomo X.
Otomo X.
Yeah.
Let's talk about drumming first of all. Where did your love of music come from?
Interesting. Well, it's actually something I've been thinking about a lot recently because I hear a lot of people talk about what music their dad liked and it sort of really influenced what they listened to. But for me, it was my mum. And I find it very rare that people actually talk about what music their mum likes. But my mum was like super, super into contemporary classical music, like really knows her stuff about it. Would take me to concerts of like Steve Reich and... Terry Riley and all of these kind of quite complicated things for a young girl. So I kind of got my musical education from my mum, which wow. I really sort of appreciate.
And when did you start picking up the drums and what was that?
My best friend Lucy wanted to play the drums. We were the two littlest girls in our class.
That's
and I think
adorable.
We were about 8 years old.
Yeah.
I think she thought it'd be hilarious to play the drums as like this little girl, like what a weird thing it would be for someone so small to do it, because
yeah.
at the time it just seemed like something that big, you know, tattooed men did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as two little 8-year-old girls, we started playing the drums, and we both kept going for a long time.
Really?
Yeah.
And obviously you've carried on going.
I've carried on going. Yeah. Lucy works at London Zoo now, but
I love that. Are you guys still in touch?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Good.
Yeah.
I like to hear yeah. that. And, you know, as a, I guess, a female in the music industry, what's that been like? And we've been talking a lot about, obviously, sexism within the creative industry.
Mm.
What has it been like for you?
In the music industry? I think that there's pros and cons. Sometimes you got to think of the positives, and people do pay attention because you stand out as an all-female band. It's quite unusual, so people, certain groups will pay more attention to that.
Mm.
So there are positives, and also there's things that can be a bit more difficult as well. For me, I found everything about playing, everything about the crew that we work with, everyone that we work with, from record label to tour crew, and everyone is zero problems. They're all fantastic people, male and female, and that's been a breeze. But what I found harder was the press side of it. You're suddenly thrown into photo shoots, and we're used to seeing women in magazines and papers and online looking perfect,
flawless
airbrush, been in hair and makeup, and that's sort of what we see of women in the media. And suddenly you're thrown into that. Someone comes into your rehearsal room, takes a photo, you don't get to choose it, and it gets put in this context alongside these incredibly beautiful women. And as a woman, you're used to being compared, I think, a lot. So
it's
you're
true.
Suddenly
we
like
find that. Yeah,
thrown into this world that makes you really sort of paranoid, and you start to change yourself to fit into this fake imaginary perfection that doesn't really exist in real life.
I think the press pit women against each other.
I was going to say, do you mean compared against other women?
Well, I think as women we compare ourselves as well. I think that's something that is, I don't know where that comes from, but I think it happens. We all look at pictures in magazines and think, oh, you know, on Instagram, etc. But I think that comes from a society that pits women against each other, and that's sort of where that comes from.
Do you see it changing? Do you see Because you don't get that with men in magazines.
No, men in magazines just look normal blokes.
Yeah, whereas...
which is fine, yeah. Which is great.
Do they?
Yeah, they
look pretty polished too in magazines as well, I reckon.
Yeah, but
when
I
you
think...
encounter real men in the real world, they're quite gross. You know, on the whole, let's be real about it, they stink.
No, they do.
I love guys as much as I love women. Yeah. Not like that, but no.
But I think the balance is different. I think it's sort of... maybe with guys you'll get 20% of these polished kind of David Gandhis of the world, and then
there's
women,
a way bigger spectrum.
There's sort of 20% who aren't polished. So it's a very different balance, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully times will change. We won't have, photographs of women coming out of clubs and photographers trying to take pictures up their dresses and skirts and, all of it needs to change.
Or maybe there'll be female paparazzi and we'll just be taking photos down men's trousers.
Yeah, exactly. Let's flip it.
Would that ever happen?
I don't feel like that's the solution. I don't think that should be the takeaway of UN Women's.
I agree that
it's deserved, but I don't think it'll solve anything.
But in all seriousness, if there was an all-female paparazzi, they wouldn't do that.
No, exactly.
Like, they wouldn't even cross people's mind to do that. So I think that's
oh, it is weird.
Worth thinking about. Yeah, exactly.
It's the most primitive thing I've ever... It's like, in terms of the industry, like, you're a monkey if you're doing that. What's wrong with you? Why? Oh, looking at it. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, it's pretty sad. How did it come that you linked up with the other girls in the band then, like, being that you're part of an all-female group?
Well, originally the band wasn't intended to be an all-female group. It started with the guitarist and bassist, and they were looking for a male singer, actually. But... they found a female singer instead, and then as three women they were like, okay, let's make this a female band. So they looked for a female drummer, and that's where I came in.
Cool. I'm also a drummer.
But
since I was about 9 years old.
Oh, amazing.
But what, you've always played in kind of rock bands?
Well, I played like in geeky orchestras growing up, playing the triangle and stuff, but yeah, I kind of changed to rock music not that long ago, actually, like 6-7 years ago.
Triangle is a dope instrument. That's way underrated. Underrated, sorry. Yeah, you'd think I've been here 25 hours. Yeah, underrated, yeah. No, I mean, the technical skill to playing a triangle well is actually
And the pressure
super
as well. Yeah. The pressure. You have to wait for like 10 minutes and you play one note.
Exactly.
If you miss it, wouldn't have the patience. At all. Yeah. Your night at, is it Shacklewell Arms?
Shacklewell Arms, yeah.
Too Many a Man. And a whole night of music by women, all genres. First Friday of every month. Tell us about it. I probably have.
that's it. No, basically I started doing a night at the Shacklewell Arms, which was an idea shared with one of the guys who runs it, Niall, who's a friend of mine. We're talking about, why don't we do a night just all female music? And that's... it's quite open because obviously there's very little things that you can't just like, what am I trying to say? Morning.
I can't help.
So where is Shacklewell?
23 hours
okay,
down.
So it's not just like music just by women, but music with a strong female element to it. So that's at the Shacklewell Arms, first Friday of every month. And it goes off. People love it. And
really?
Also, it's a chance to play some really interesting music by like artists like Smurz and Terza and who else am I thinking of? Loads and loads of female producers who are just absolutely smashing it.
What would you say to young females wanting to get into the music industry, wanting, you know, to play drums, to just get involved? What advice would you give them?
Do it. Yeah. Especially, I have so many women, like young and not as young, coming up to me saying, I want to play the drums and I'm going to start. And it happens so often that it feels like there's this tidal wave of female drummers coming and everyone needs to watch out. But I think just do it. I think one of the things that we found when we started, it was, I guess in 2012, the sort of general feeling around feminism and being a woman in music was different and less good than it is now. And we really stopped ourselves from talking about feminism to not get labelled a feminist band and to be put in a box. And, you know, we just didn't particularly want to talk about gender. We wanted to talk about other things. So it was, at that point, we sort of had to go in it and just ignore everything about gender and ignore everything about sexism and just do what we did. And that's sort of what we had to do to get into the position that we got to, which is just being respected as a band, not as a sort of feminist or female band. But I think the situation is a bit different now. People are talking about feminism a lot, and you can go in all guns blazing and talk about it, and you're not going to be pigeonholed as much at this point, I think.
Well, look, sadly, we've got to say goodbye. Luke Cutforth, I know we've got to say goodbye before, brought you back. Got to say goodbye to you again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. and Faye Milton, thank you so, so much
it's
for joining
lovely.
Us.
It's been lovely, and well done for your 24 hours.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm almost there. I'm almost. We'll see what happens. But we're going to leave you guys just for a few minutes with Get Right by Jennifer Lopez. Don't go anywhere.
Baby singing at the end before.
Have you not?
No. You haven't watched the video. Yeah,
it's one of my favourite songs of all time.
I love that one. I love it. Sarah Love.
Hey.
We're going to say our farewells to you.
I know.
It's been so lovely to have you here. That smile hasn't stopped. It's been lovely.
Well, I'm just in awe of what an amazing job you're doing. And I'm just so happy that I've got a chance to dip in to feel some of the excitement and the pure buzz that is in the Foo Bar studios.
It has been good.
good. And Harriet, you're back.
I'm back. Hi, everybody. Yay! I'm back. And it's really weird because you actually seem exactly the same as when I left, which was literally nearly 24 hours ago.
It's crazy.
22 hours ago is when I left.
When,
20 hours
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, when you left, I was like, oh my God, when I see you next time, I know I'm almost at the end.
Yeah,
I'm
you looked at me as like I was Jesus when I walked in the room. I'm not going to lie.
I hugged you a couple of times.
Yeah, you were like, I'm so glad to see you.
I didn't believe it was you. I didn't believe it. We are going to play a quick song. I believe we're going to play the Sesh. No, we're going to play the Savages.
But before we do, Sarah Love's got something to...
Okay, so basically there's loads of cool events that are happening as part of everything that Rachel has been trumpeting about for the last 24 hours. And there's an amazing event happening tomorrow. That's the 11th of March. Needs, in collaboration with He for She, it's an all-day event that's addressing gender equality within the music industry, featuring engaging panel discussions from the likes of model and activist Monroe Bergdorf. She really made a storm recently, didn't she? And BBC Radio 1 presenter B Traits, artist Faye Milton, of the Savages, who we were just speaking to. If you missed that, listen back on the website foodbarradio.com.
Boom!
And Brit Critics Choice nominee Chloe Howe. Get involved and book the tickets. You know we're sharing all that information on the Twitter as well. And it's all about getting involved in all these cool events happening.
Listen back to Chloe Howe. Yesterday we had her on the beginning of the show as well.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Loads of lovely women.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Before we play the Savages, I'm not going to be very quick. It's really weird because I'm seeing you in a different outfit. And I'm a bit like, I bet she's showered and everything.
I actually haven't showered.
I'm so proud.
I wanted to make you feel better. I'll come in as stinky as possible so you didn't feel.
But
I am wearing my Spice Girls t-shirt though.
I'm so proud. It's a brilliant t-shirt. We're going to play the Savages now. Sarah Love, thank you so much. We'll be back in a few minutes. Don't go anywhere.